You know, there's a reason for cautionary tales.
Then why don't more people heed their warnings?
I don't know. But after they hear my new show, they will think twice.
Oh yeah? About what?
Eating Tide Pods, playing with Ouija boards, tucking the Karens, you name it. If you should heed caution, we're talking about it.
Check out Harper's brand new podcast, Cautionary Tales with Harper. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you download podcasts.
And be sure to press subscribe and give us a review.
Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Subscribe wherever you download podcasts today.
Today on The Grave Talks, Intuitive Empath, a conversation with Shannon Rogers. At an incredibly young age, Shannon Rogers learned to use her abilities as an intuitive empath as a means of navigating life and the negative energy of the living that surrounded her. As a woman, she learned that these skills were still there and, in fact, could play a great role in not only helping herself, but others as she entered on a journey of paranormal investigation. Today, we hear about some of those journeys. Journeys that would lead her to confront disturbed souls who once tormented the living in their lifetimes and some who never walked the earth at all.
Really started, you know, just very, very early, around 4 or 5 years old, just, you know, being an intuitive empath. I didn't understand it then, but I, you know, through early childhood trauma, I learned how to feel people's emotions out to be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I knew when someone was mad. I mean, I had to learn how to feel the way they were feeling to see how I would react.
Mm-hmm.
And so it all started kind of in the metaphysical world for me, understanding being an empath and before I started seeing spirits. It all started with just feeling energy and feeling people's energy and how they react to certain situations, to see how I would react to certain situations.
And that's interesting. Do you feel, I mean, and that's very understandable how that develops in someone who needs to have that develop almost for survival, to kind of know the lay of the land of who's around you. How are they feeling? How do you adapt so you can get by? This is just an opinion question. Do you think everyone has the ability to adapt and to develop that empathic skill? Or is that something that, you know, you happen to have that and you were able to really develop that more because you specifically, and obviously other people do too, but do you think there's not everyone has that, those sort of building blocks to build upon to make that stronger?
I'm glad you asked that. Actually, this is just my theory on the situation. And I think one person out of like 2,000 people that I've asked them, how did you become an empath? And I told them about my theory and they would say, all but one person is like, yes. Okay, when you're a small child,
mm-hmm,
and you're still developing, you know, your behavioral skills, your communication skills, the way, you know, just your brain is developing, if something traumatic happens, it causes you to open up a different part of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to, you know, like, am I in trouble? Should I be quiet? Are they mad at me? Are they going to throw something? Is it going to, that going to happen again kind of situation?
Yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, just to be able to communicate and you're when at that age or at that stage, that it causes you to just, your brain just to work differently. Basically you communicate differently. And, but I think that can happen also later, another, you know, at a later age in life, because, mm-hmm, you know, if you go through trauma, you know, that's not always a situation, but that's my theory. I think that, you know, you can, anybody can open up different parts of their brain if they're given the chances or circumstances or being forced to.
Sure. It just has that many more years to develop and for you to understand what it's all about if it happens at an earlier age.
Yes. Because like I said, your brain's still developing. And when you use those for your ways of communication more than verbally speaking to someone, you know, you're connected to people's energy and emotions a lot more than the typical person who grows up in a perfect childhood or,
mm-hmm,
you know, didn't have to experience those things. They didn't have to open up that level. So maybe that's not there.
That's a very interesting way of looking at it, and I think very accurate in many circumstances when I think about it, and friends and family that I have that are what you know you'd call an empath, and you look at some of their childhood situations, it's like, well, that does make sense. That you know is that you know obviously no one wants to you know willingly have childhood trauma, but it's one of those things where when you look back on it after the fact. It's part of the recipe, it seems, for having that ability.
Right.
Yeah. Let's talk more about, as you discovered, you know, you have this ability, the empathic ability, and as you grew older, talk about your interest in the paranormal. How did that develop?
With the paranormal field, I actually started out in the metaphysical. In 2012, I moved to Colorado. I had a lot of my whole adult life and teenage life and childhood life was just, you know, just a lot of misery for myself and just a lot of not understanding. And when I moved to Colorado, I got around some people that helped me understand, like, well, you're an empath. And I'm like, what? What does that mean? And I dug into that and I really embraced that as a gift. And I learned about it and took a lot of different metaphysical classes, learned how to do a lot of things. I had a great mentor, Lisa Camarlo in Colorado. And when I moved back to Texas, it was hard to be around like-minded people again because there's just not that many people in DFW that are like-minded that are out and open about it.
Sure.
And then I, you know, went on an event to Old Park Hotel and when Chad Lindbergh was there and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is it. Once I went, you know, I mean, I was hooked right away. I took everything I knew about communicating with spirits, everything I feel. And it bled right into paranormal, and I have been running with it ever since because I have so much passion for it because it's like my whole life has led up to this point making sense.
And I want to talk about that.
Spirits.
Go ahead.
It's like it's helping spirits cross over. It's helping people understand. They have a story that wants to be told. There's different reasons. Every scenario is different when you're dealing with, you know, with the paranormal and spirits and energy and stuff. But, you know, for me to understand everything that I've been going through my whole life and not understanding, I understand now. It led me up to paranormal, and I love it when the teaching people, helping them understand, like people that are empaths or people that are going through problems or people that are connected to the spirit world. You know, it's just one of those things you got to help people and kind of guide them along, and it's a beautiful process. It really is, but...
And I want to talk about how the two worlds kind of collided, the world of metaphysical and paranormal for you. And we'll get to that in a moment. But first, I want to take a step back to what you talked about when you went to Colorado and you kind of went down a journey and you started to learn more about yourself, more about the metaphysical world and how that plays into who you are and how you think and how things work for you. What were some of the biggest things that you learned about yourself on that journey during your time in Colorado?
I learned that I was different, but I wasn't that different. You know, I got invited to go to a metaphysical class by a lady that I met. I learned how to start doing tarot, and I don't do it traditionally. I learned to listen to what I'm feeling and the energy of this person in front of me. It was just, it's really hard to explain. It was like I was blossoming so much. I was coming alive, and I was freeing myself, and I just really dug deep into it and started, different training classes, regressive therapy classes. You know, I even took a class on, you know, seances, and they said, guess what? We're not going to do a seance. We just want to teach you the history about it. So I learned about all the different things, and, you know, I just learned to trust myself. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Sure.
You know, trust my intuition and everything. And so it was just, I mean, an amazing, amazing experience being in Colorado. I was put there for a reason because it was my time to become who I am and to come down the road that I am.
Sure.
But, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how blessed I feel that those moments happened in my life because, you know, you live your whole life not understanding, thinking you're different. And then when you figure out that different is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, go ahead.
No. I just want to hear how that has affected you when you get to that point of, wait a second, like there's this is good, this is not bad. Just because, you know, so many people around us, you know, may either look down at it or not understand it, and then you kind of feel excluded or worse. coming to an understanding of, no, actually, this is me. This is who I am, and I'm not alone in that journey. Let me ask you, what was your outlook on the world of ghosts and the paranormal, specifically like ghosts and things of that nature, when you were in Colorado and you were going on that journey? Did you believe in spirits and ghosts? Was it something that, you know, was just kind of out there? Did you have an opinion? Where were you at that point in your life?
I've always believed in spirits and the afterlife and everything, but once I started going down that journey and being able to connect, you know, in the metaphysical with spirit,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew it was real. I had no doubt about it. I've seen apparitions way before I got into the paranormal and everything. So, I mean, it was just, my opinion is I've always believed in it.
Yeah.
But now that I'm in the paranormal now, it's like, I have confirmation. I can use the metaphysical side of me, which mm-hmm. is the more dominant side, and then have the paranormal with the equipment and everything to validate.
Yeah. So it was always just a fact. It was always just there for you. There was no, I need to go prove this to myself that it exists through this exercise or that exercise. It was just, the sky is blue. It's a fact. Tell me a little bit more about how you said that you had experienced apparitions even prior to going on that journey. What had exactly happened, and what was going through your mind when that occurred?
The first time I'd always imagined stuff in my head because things happen in my sleep behind my eyelids. Sometimes I can't sleep because I'll have to lay on my stomach and face the headboard with my eyes wide open because I'll either see shadow figures everywhere. I'll close my eyes and see them in my, you know, right there in my face. Or when I dream on some nights are just that bad for me. But it's just, I don't know. It's hard to explain.
So
someone is knocking on my door.
So it wasn't just a one-time experience of you're going down a hall and you see an apparition. This is kind of an ongoing thing for you where you would run into...
Well, no. In the beginning, I thought I was just having crazy dreams and all that stuff. And so when it really honestly started was 2011, 2012, I had read a book about, you know, contacting and finding your spirit guide.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, at that point, a lot of people in the beginning, they want to rush things. They want to experience it right now. So I started meditating really, really hard. And I was like, I want to see something, something, something. And I had this light above the table I was sitting at that I could actually see through my eyelids. It was iridescent, but I could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of focused that as a light. And next thing you know, I opened my eyes and to the left, I see this like late teen, early 20s sitting on a couch in a tank top and red shorts, just like looking like panicked, and he gets up and there was an old lady on, you know, to the left of me, and I'm like, what the hell? And the guy just gets up and he runs out of the, you know, room, and then not so much out of the room, he just was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that freaked me out. I didn't do it for a while. I closed that off for a while because it freaked me out so much because I pushed so hard for it.
Yeah.
But now it happens all the time. I'll be at friend's house, I'm like, you just had somebody walk across your kitchen. And especially at Jefferson Hotel this last weekend, I was sleeping in the room where Lydia had actually hung herself. And I was trying to go to sleep. It was going to be an early night because we've been on the road so much. We were going to make it a chill night.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept hearing, you know, like, hey, and I looked up and I see someone like in a lace gown, a confused look on their face. And she's just going, hey, huh. And that was it. And it happened over and over again. So when I was awake, I was dreaming about it. Or, you know, I call it dreaming about it because I was seeing it when I was awake. And in my dreams, it was happening as well. So, I see it all the time now. Mm-hmm. I've seen little boys that have drowned. I've done the research and found out there was something that happened there. But
yeah. So let's get into the world of when you started to get into the world of paranormal investigation after your time in Colorado, after you really kind of grounded yourself in who you were. How did that begin for you? How did you get into the world of wanting to investigate supernatural hauntings or paranormal locations and things of that nature?
Okay, so after I left Colorado, I met my youngest child's father, and he would have a few gadgets, you know, and we would go like the Arlington Hotel or do different things, or I went to Scotland, and you know, I didn't consider it investigating, but you know, come to find out we were. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it. And that's when I started finding out that, like, hey, this is kind of tied together a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I could already communicate with spirits. And when you got the, you know, the equipment validating and going back and forth and communicating, that really excited me. Well, then when Chad Lindbergh was in Ballinger, this guy was just kind of seeing for a little bit. He's like, hey, you know, you're into, you know, you're this, you know, energy and spirits and stuff. He was like, I really love Chad Lindbergh. I would love to take you with me to do this experience and this investigation. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And then just seeing it firsthand, because I don't watch TV, so I don't watch all the ghost shows or anything.
Yeah.
But seeing it firsthand and experiencing what I did and getting the EVPs and the communication, it just lit a fire in me. It was so amazing that, like, it validated everything that I've been able to do. And does that make any sense?
No, it does. I love to hear what when you went on that investigation and you were out there, you know, for the first time. And obviously you already had knowledge of yourself and what your abilities were, but then you're putting yourself into the environment of paranormal investigation. Tell me about that. Tell me about, like, what some of those first experiences were that you look back on and go, I remember when that all kind of began for me, and what, you know, what some of those moments were like. Put take us to that part in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. We were downstairs in the basement at Old Park Hotel, and you know, there were two different groups, and, you know, they started playing the Phasma Box. And the Phasma Box is kind of iffy, you know, depending on, you know, some people, there's mixed reviews on it, but I started having conversations with it back and forth and validating conversations. I'm like, okay, this is really awesome. This is like, you know, equipment really saying it, and it's other people, and it's talking about different rooms. And then I spent time in the room I was staying in just doing EVPs and playing them back. And I got Class A EVPs, and I'm sitting there, I'm getting goosebumps, which I've learned today. Anytime I get chills or my shoulder blades clench up, it's, you know, validation. And it was just like, it was amazing. I mean, the place is, it was a brothel twice. It was a school. It was so many different things. And they're still undigging history there all the time. And just to be there in that moment and experience, like, spirits actually talking to you. You know, we were talking about, you know, having tea, and then saying, you know, tea would come up on, you know, on the spirit boxes, or, you know, just using the word data being on the ovulus, you know, tea, coffee. It was just different little things. And that's what really sprung it for me. I'm like, okay, so I can use equipment to actually, the equipment actually made me more confident. It made me believe in what I was doing more, like believe in myself more and to trust what I get.
Mm-hmm. When you were there and you were having those experiences and you were getting this validation, what was going through your mind? I mean, as you were, you're feeling that trust, I imagine, like, a lot of, you know, it almost kind of opens up this whole possibility of, you know, oh my gosh, you know, this, you know, this is in fact.
Oh, I was excited.
Yeah.
I've done skydiving, bungee jumping, all that stuff, roller coasters. I went bungee jumping and thought, oh, I'm sorry, skydiving. And I thought something must be really wrong with me if I didn't get an adrenaline rush from that. But I will tell you, the adrenaline rush I get when I get validation or, you know, evidence or just hear or see full body apparitions, I am absolutely, that's the adrenaline right there. I completely just light up. I'm like a Christmas tree and I want to share it with everyone and show them, because it's cool.
So when you had that experience and you lit up like a Christmas tree because you were so excited, what were some of the things that came to mind of, okay, now that I know how this works and some of the puzzle pieces had come together, what was going through your mind of, okay, I got to go try this next? What was the next thing that you had to go and try and experience, whether it be going to a specific location or tactics for investigating? What was immediately kind of added to that list of, we got to do this?
I just didn't want to stop, to be honest with you. I mean, it was a desire that I had to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
It was a yearning that, like, it's almost like that was my path, and I can't look away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a driving force. And there was someone that everyone knows very well in the field that was there. And I ended up being on her team for a little while, and we're still friends. And then I left that to do my own thing, you know, to start my own team and, you know, do a lot of events and stuff now. But it was just like, it was just like opened up the can. It was just it's just crazy to explain. Like, it was complete. I'm not stopping. This is like, I'm ready for the next one, the next one, the next one, the next one. And I really, really try to remember to stick to my, you know, my metaphysical roots.
Mm-hmm.
Because I get so excited with the equipment. So I'm trying to make sure I always blend both together to keep real to who I am. But there's just so much amazing equipment out there these days, too. Really amazing technology. It's just blooming, blooming, blooming. There's a lot more coming out. It's just awesome.
It's amazing what is going on out there. And I don't really investigate. I just sit here and I hear everybody's stories in the field. So I talk to, over the course of the year, I talk to pretty much everyone. And, so I'm always kind of hearing, this is out now and that's out. Like, wow, that's – and I could never remember what the name of anything is. I couldn't tell you, what my model of my cell phone is, more or less what these – the devices are. I can tell you what they do, but when it comes to the technical name – I'm an idiot. I can't remember people's names either. It's just one of those things. But when you started to get out there and you're starting to investigate, what in your mind, what is your goal when you're going on an investigation? And I'm sure it probably differs from location to location a bit, but tell me when you're out there, I'll spell out the scenario. You're going to an investigation of someone's specific home, a residence where someone actually does live, versus a location where it's, let's pay a fee and you can stay here for the night and investigate it. But when there's people involved, there's people who are saying, I'd like some help. Can you come here and take a look at this? What do you have in mind when you step into that house to help those individuals?
Oh, is to absolutely help them. I mean, they're getting what they're getting and what they're feeling for a reason. And the way I like to do it is to go in, do a preliminary walkthrough interview, and whether it's filmed or not, I have a lot of non-disclosures that I do more non-disclosures than anything. Those are the ones that I really like because they're more stories that people, it's not about getting them out. It's more like they need help. And they're just going to get an investigation, getting the evidence and seeing what I feel, what comes across, and then just clearing those properties, giving them some peace because they're hurting. And that's the main reason I do it is because the spirit, the family's being tormented, but the spirits are tormented as well. And so it brings peace to both of them. So that's my goal, my end game plan when doing an investigation.
To try and help them. Tell me, what are some of the tactics that you employ to achieve that goal of in fact, helping them?
Well, every investigation's different. That's why I like to do a preliminary, mm-hmm. because you need to know what you're going into. I like to go in blindly, but as far as the history and stuff, but I like to know what's going on with the family and then go in and, see what you can get, see what happens. And you got to make a game plan from there because every situation is different.
Mm-hmm.
And then, with the clearing and stuff like that, I use an array of different stuff to try to help. And sometimes you got to go back twice, but just kind of, feel every story, every spirit's different. So just kind of knowing what you need to go in with and with your battle plan, basically. A lot of times the spirits just want to be heard and they're happy.
Without giving any names or locations or anything like that, tell us about one of the more troubling or difficult or investigations that you've gone on where, it wasn't just, in and out and it seems that we've kind of made peace here. But this one took a little bit of extra work to try and get something accomplished. Can you share a story like that you've encountered?
I absolutely can. And then this is a non-disclosure, but there's this girl who was a baby,
mm-hmm.
staying with her grandparents in this home. And the grandfather was being, about to go down for child molestation.
Mm-hmm.
And the grandmother, there was a divorce going on, and there was an argument that took suit in the hallway in this home. And this is about the 90s, early 90s. And when he was saying, basically, let me have, I'll just say the baby, or it's going to be you. And he aggressively tried to get the baby to do bad things too, which is makes the whole scenario horrible.
Yeah.
And so the grandmother shot this person, the grandfather, in the stomach with a shotgun, and he died in the hallway. Well, the person inhabiting that home, that baby, grew up there, and still, as an adult with four stepdaughters, lives in that same home. And that spirit is completely causing havoc there. And when I was doing a clearing of that property, he needs to go. Mm-hmm. I was like, do you ever see shadow figures going down the hallway? And he was like, before I even went in there, and he was like, no, that's why we can't face our furniture towards the hallway, because we see it. It's there, it's obvious, and it just creeps us out. And I said, he's preying on those girls, those four girls in the bed. I was like, it needs to stop. We need to clear it. Well, I had brought on someone to help out with that clearing that I hadn't investigated before. In the middle of the clearing, he opened the front door, and it broke what was going on, the process that I used.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did my best to do what I could that night, and I contacted them the next day, and I said, I'm probably going to have to come back. Just keep me posted. I've got a lot of things going on, but keep me posted. You are not on the back burner. Just let me know how things are going, and I do intend on coming back. And I got a call a week ago that it needs to happen, so I'm bringing in reinforcements, and we're going to get it done. And I'm going to bring in some trusted people to make sure that this family has peace, because, even the man of the house, the garage door, with the shotgun situation, the day before he got assaulted, he had given, who was a baby, this person, he had given her a gun, a handgun.
Mm-hmm.
The next night, the whole garage door came out, bolt from the bolts in the ceiling and everything came down and, crashed on him.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up in the hospital, stitches and everything. And then the day before we came out there to investigate the first time, he had a huge, motor part, fall on his foot, a lot of different things. He's been being attacked in his home. So, it's just a crazy situation. I want to help them. And I told them, I'm going to make this right. I'm going to help you guys. And we're going to get it cleared for them. And I personally know them, so it makes it even 10 times more important for me.
Sure.
But yeah, it was a very difficult one. And also I need an interpreter, because there was a language barrier being constantly, I knew the bad words that were being said to me across the portal, but the bad words were coming like crazy, but there was, full sentences that, I'm going to bring an interpreter this time, and I'm bringing reinforcements, and we're going to get this family taken care of. Cause like I said, it doesn't always happen the first time, but your goal is, no matter how many times, do it and do it right for the family and give them some peace.
When you have something like that, where it's a human spirit, but it was obviously a horrible human when they were alive, and still a horrible person on the other side, is there a foolproof way of exercising something like that out of a home? Do you have to essentially get them to agree, convince them in some way, shape, or form that they need to get the hell out of there? Or can sometimes this just be a losing battle no matter what, that this thing's going to stay there? Or are there ways of really truly eradicating something like that out of a house?
There are certain times when you just need to move on. But with this particular spirit, as horrible as he is, he's not demonic.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pretty dark, but he's not some dark entity, floating around there. He was just a horrible person, and he's a horrible person afterwards, very stubborn.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he can be eradicated. There are times when it just can't happen, but he can be eradicated. And this time, I'm going to know who's going in there with me, so it doesn't affect what, the outcome.
What, in your opinion, do you feel is more difficult, to eradicate? And I don't know if you have experience in both areas here or not, but like I said, it's just an opinion. Is it easier to eradicate something like that, where it's a extremely stubborn, horrible person that is haunting, versus something that is demonic that is haunting? With demonic, sometimes there may be more of a direct playbook in terms of what it hates and what it opposes,
right,
to try and move it out. And that almost feels like, well, if A plus B equals C with demonic, that you can kind of have a formula. But when you have something that is just as sporadic and just unpredictable as humans can be, what's the easier one to get rid of?
I think it all depends on who you're working with.
Yeah.
I've had a full-on battle with demons, and the recording gives me chills, and I still cry when I listen to it. The battle of archangels and demons in one room, and that was probably the craziest experience I had. But at the same time, this stubborn, horrible person in life and death, it was difficult. It was affecting people there that night during, the clearing. So it all really depends on who you have, in your little posse there, ready to go to battle. It really, really depends, and little things can happen that can change the outcome. But the thing is, you don't give up and you keep trying. So again, it really depends on the scenario, really, because like I said, every story is different.
Mm-hmm. What happened with the experience that you had just referenced there when you had a full on encounter with demons?
Okay, I was at another non-disclosed location.
Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry, I had to cough. Basically, this woman had an ancestral curse and, I mean, was just plagued with darkness around her all the time. And a little bit of research was done by the lead of the team that I was on. And we went in, and, I mean, it was all night, and we had a psychic medium from California on the phone the whole time, and between me doing the emotional side, that person being the voice, and the other person being the eyes, I mean, it was crazy. Like, you know, the archangels were there, and I'm like, as I'm closing my eyes, I'm seeing everything going on, and because I'm feeling it emotionally, and it turned into a vision for me. And, I mean, there was one point where there was what they called a seeker that was there, and I think he kind of came up because we were trying to, you know, get everything to go away and send him to the light and everything, and right before, you know, he was about to cross, his you know, the appearance of his face had changed. Who the lead called Satan just backhanded him and he went flying and then he was gone. And that bothered me so bad. I cried for it about it for weeks and I don't know why, but I started crying. You can hear it on the audio and it was just emotionally, it drained me so much. But, you know, and we left that house not being finished, but we knew before we went it was going to be a two-stage process, but it was handled later. But that was pretty profound. That was probably the most profound experience I have ever had. When you have a trifecta of people that have different gifts and when you can bring them together and be really, really effective, I mean, it was real for us and it brought peace to the person involved. So that's what's important.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Shannon Rogers. In part two of our conversation, what happened when Shannon had a full-on encounter with demons? Is there ever a way to identify if a family has an ancestral curse on them? And seeing dead people at a haunted location where the dark history, in fact, is not accurate or even true, why is it that sometimes spirits seem to play the role of that myth? When someone is being attacked at their home, does Shannon ever feel in danger when the attack is specifically coming from a spirit? What is Shannon's biggest fear when investigating a haunted location? And what draws her to haunted locations? All of that and more in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up to be one at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. You'll get access to part two of this conversation, along with access to hundreds of our interviews in their entirety and advanced episodes of the program weeks before they're released to the public. Check it out, patreon.com/thegravetalks. It's only $5 a month and help keep us on the air. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.